From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippines, 7,107 islands, Manila, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I greet you for the weekend, my honor, privilege, and whatever, to take you on through the weekend with fascinating stuff. I'm going to begin tonight with what is the top story, and then I'm going to follow up on it a little bit, or a lot. The top story this hour, wait a minute, just before I get into that, let me say that the webcam photo this week on Coast to Coast, I always get to put one or maybe two webcam photos up, and this was taken through my window, through my office window, just about sunset here, and looks out on Makati Metro Manila at sunset. Kind of pretty, I thought, actually taken through the window, not with the window open, mind you, but right through the window. So you might want to take a look at that, coasttocoastam.com. In addition, as you know, I spent about 10 years on the island of Okinawa, and I would very much like to get an email from somebody presently on Okinawa, preferably in Naha, Okinawa. So if anybody's on Okinawa right now and listening, please email me. I am artbell at AOL.com. That's artbell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L at AOL.com, or artbell@mindspring.com. That's A-R-T-B-E-L-L. Probably best to send it to Mindspring, M-I-N-D-S-P-R-I-N-G. artbell@mindspring.com. Now, the top story. An American thought to be an Al-Qaeda activist appeared in a videotape with the terror group's deputy leader on Saturday. That's our big story, and called on his countrymen to convert to Islam and for U.S. soldiers to switch sides in the Iraq and Afghan wars. The 48-minute video posted on an Islamic militant website had footage of Al-Qaeda's number two leader and of Adam Gadon, a 28-year-old American who the FBI believes attended Al-Qaeda training camps in Pakistan and served as an Al-Qaeda translator. So basically, what he said, you can see for yourself. I saw it on Fox News just minutes prior to the broadcast. He said, convert to Islam or die. Which, of course, is what is being repeated again and again and again. Convert to Islam or die. In a moment, I'll have a few reflections on that statement and what all this war really means. As many of you know, longtime listeners, prior to the Iraq war, I was adamantly opposed to our getting in. However, once we got in, if you'll recall, my comments were that we damn well better win it, whether I was opposed to it or not. Once we're in, we better win. The following are words of Dr. Vernon Chong, Major General, United States Air Force, retired. He made these comments back in July of 2005. To get out of a difficulty, one usually must go through it. Our country is now facing the most serious threat to its existence as we know it that we've faced in your lifetime and mine. That includes World War II. The deadly seriousness is greatly compounded by the fact that there are very few of us who can think we can possibly lose this war, and even fewer who realize what losing really means. Let's look at a few basic facts. When did the threat to the United States begin? Many would say in response to that, September 11th, 2001. The answer, as far as the U.S. is concerned, is 1979, 22 years prior to September 11. Think about it. The Iran embassy hostages, 1979, Beirut, Lebanon embassy, 1983, Beirut, Lebanon marine barracks attack, 1983, Lockerbie, Scotland, Pan Am flight to New York, 1988. First New York Trade Center attack, the first unsuccessful one, 1993. Saudi Arabia, Khobar Towers Military Complex, 1996. Kenya, U.S. Embassy, 1998. Tanzania, U.S. Embassy, 1998. Aden, Yemen, USS Cole, 2000. Remember that? New York World Trade Centers, 2001. Pentagon, 2001. Note that during the period from 1981 to 2001, there were 7,581 terrorist attacks worldwide. Why were we attacked? Envy of our position, our success, our freedoms. The attacks happened during the administrations of President Carter, Reagan, Bush 1, Clinton, and Bush 2. We cannot fault either the Republicans or the Democrats, as there were no provocations by any of the presidents or their immediate predecessors, Presidents Ford or Carter. Who were the attackers? In each case, the attacks on the U.S. were carried out by Muslims. What is the Muslim population of the world? 25%. Isn't the Muslim religion peaceful? Hopefully. But that's not really material. There's no doubt that the predominantly Christian population of Germany was peaceful. But under the dictatorial leadership of Hitler, who was also Christian, that made no difference. You either went along with the administration or you were eliminated. There were 5 to 6 million Christians killed by the Nazis for political reasons, and that includes 7,000 Polish priests. Thus, almost the same number of Christians were killed by the Nazis as the 6 million Holocaust Jews who were killed by them, and we seldom heard anything at all other than the Jewish atrocities. Although Hitler kept the world focused on the Jews, he had no hesitancy about killing anyone who got in his way of exterminating the Jews or of taking over the world, German, Christian, or other. Same with the Muslim terrorists. They focus the world on the U.S., but they kill all in their way. Their own people, or the Spanish, French, anyone else. Point here is, and just like the peaceful Germans were of no protection to anyone from the Nazis, no matter how many peaceful Muslims there may be, they are no protection for us from the Muslim terrorist leaders and what they're fanatically bent on doing by their own pronouncements, like the one we heard today, killing all of us infidels. I don't blame the peaceful Muslims. What would you do if your choice was to shut up or die? So who are we at war with? Now, there's no way we can honestly respond that it is anyone other than the Muslim terrorists. Trying to be politically correct and avoid verbalizing this conclusion might well be fatal. There is no way to win if you don't clearly recognize and articulate who you're fighting. So with that background, now to the two major questions. Can we lose the war? What does losing really mean? If we are to win, we must clearly answer these two pivotal questions. We can definitely lose the war. And as anomalous as it may sound, the first major reason we can lose is that so many of us simply do not fathom the answer to the second question. What does losing mean? Now, it would appear that a great many of us think that losing the war means hanging our heads, bringing the troops home, and going about our business, kind of like post-war Vietnam. This is as far from the truth as one can get. What losing really means is that we'd no longer be the premier country in the world. The attacks will not subside, but rather will steadily increase. Remember, they want us dead, not just quiet. If they had just wanted us quiet, they would not have produced an increasing series of attacks against us over the past 18 years. The plan was clearly for terrorists to attack us until we were neutered and submissive to them. We would, of course, have no future support from any other nations for fear of reprisals and for the reason that they would see we were impotent and can't help them. They will pick off the other non-Muslim nations one at a time. It will be increasingly easier for them. They will, as a matter of fact, they actually already hold Spain hostage. Doesn't matter whether it was right or wrong for Spain to withdraw its troops from Iraq. Spain did it because the Muslim terrorists bombed their train and told them to withdraw the troops. Anything else they want Spain to do will be done. Spain is finished. The next probably will be France. Our one hope on France is that they might see the light and realize that if we don't win, they're finished too, in that they can't resist the Muslim terrorists without us. However, it may be already too late for France. France is now already 20% Muslim and fading fast. If we lose the war, our production, income, exports, and way of life will vanish as we know it. After losing, who would trade or deal with us if they were threatened by the Muslims? If we can't stop the Muslim terrorists, how could anyone else? The radical Muslims know full well what is riding on this war and therefore are completely committed to winning at any cost. We better know it too and be likewise committed to winning at any cost. Why do I go to such lengths about the results of losing? Simple. Until we recognize the cost of losing, we cannot unite and really put 100% of our thoughts and efforts into winning, and it is going to take that 100% effort to win. So how can we lose the war? Again, the answer is rather simple. We can lose the war simply by imploding, that is, defeating ourselves by refusing to recognize the enemy and their purpose, and really digging in and lending full support to the war effort. If we are united, there is no way that we can lose. If we continue to be divided, there is no way that we can win. Let me give you a few examples of how we simply don't comprehend the life and death seriousness of the situation. President Bush selects Norman Mineta as Secretary of Transportation. Although all of the terrorist attacks were committed by Muslim men between 17 and 40 years of age, Secretary Mineta refuses to allow any profiling. Does that sound like we're taking the thing seriously, this war? This is war. For the duration, we're going to have to give up some of the civil rights that we've become accustomed to. We'd better be prepared to lose some of our civil rights temporarily, or we most certainly will lose all of them permanently. And don't worry, it's not a slippery slope. We gave up plenty of civil rights during World War II and immediately restored them after the victory and, in fact, added more since. Do I blame President Bush or President Clinton before him? No. I blame us for simply assuming we can maintain all of our political correctness and all of our civil rights during this conflict and have a clean, lawful, honorable war. None of those words apply to war. Get them out of your head. Some have gone so far in their criticism of the war and or the administration that it seems they almost would literally like to see us lose. I hasten to add that this isn't because they are disloyal. It's because they just don't recognize what losing means. Nevertheless, that conduct gives the impression to the enemy that we are divided and weakening. It concerns our friends, and it does a great deal of damage to our cause. Of more recent vintage, the uproar, you'll recall, fueled by the politicians and media regarding the treatment of some prisoners of war, perhaps exemplifies best what I'm saying. We fairly recently, had an issue involving the treatment of a few Muslim prisoners of war by a small group of our military police. Remember that? These are the type of prisoners who just very few months ago were throwing their own people off buildings, cutting off their hands, cutting out their tongues, and otherwise murdering their own people just for disagreeing with Saddam Hussein. And just a few years ago, these same type prisoners chemically killed 400,000 of their own people for the same reason. They're also the same type of enemy fighters who recently were burning Americans, dragging their charred corpses through the streets of Iraq, and still more recently, the same type of enemy that was and is providing videos to all news sources internationally of the beheading of American prisoners that they held. Compare this with some of our press and politicians who for several days in the past thought and talked about nothing else but the humiliating of some Muslim prisoners, not burning them, not dragging their charred corpses through the streets, not beheading them, but humiliating them. Can this be for real? The politicians and pundits have even talked of impeachment of the Secretary of Defense. If this doesn't show the complete lack of comprehension and understanding of the seriousness of the enemy we're fighting, the life and death struggle we're in, and the disastrous results of losing this war, nothing can. Remember, the Muslim terrorists stated the goal, and it is to kill all infidels. That would be us. That translates to all non-Muslims. Not just in the United States, but throughout the world. We are the last bastion of defense. We have been criticized for many years as being arrogant. The charge is valid in at least one respect. We are arrogant in that we believe that we are so good, powerful, and smart that we can win the hearts and minds of all those who attack us. And that with both hands tied behind our back, we can defeat anything bad in the world. We can't. If we don't recognize this, our nation as we know it is not going to survive, and no other free country in the world will survive if we are defeated. And finally, name any Muslim country throughout the world that allows freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, equal rights for anyone, let alone everyone, equal status or any status for women, or that have been productive in one single way that contributes to the good of the world. This has been a long way of saying that we must be united on this war, or we're going to be equated in history books to the self-inflicted fall of the Roman Empire, if that is the Muslim leaders will allow history books to be written or read. No doubt they wouldn't. If we don't win this war right now, keep a close eye on the Muslims, the takeover in France in the next 5 years or less. They're going to continue to increase the Muslim population of France and continue to encroach little by little on the established French traditions. The French will be fighting among themselves, something they do very well, over what should or should not be done, which will continue to weaken them and keep them from any united resolve. Doesn't that sound eerily familiar? Democracies don't have their freedom taken away from them by some external military force. Instead, they give their freedoms away, politically correct peace by politically correct peace. And they're giving those freedoms away to those who have shown worldwide that they abhor freedom and will not apply it to you or even themselves once they are in power. They have universally shown that when they have taken over, they will start brutally killing each other over who will be the few who control the masses. We will never stop hearing from the politically correct about the peaceful Muslims. I close on a hopeful note by repeating what I said above. If we're united, there is no way we can lose. I hope now after the election, this was some time ago, you'll recall, the factions in our country will begin to focus on the critical situation we're in and will unite to save our country. It is your future we are talking about. Do whatever you can to preserve it. Well, since the elections he spoke of, the general spoke of there, obviously we have not united in any very seriously meaningful way. And here we are presented with a videotape from Al-Qaeda of an American telling us face-to-face exactly what this was all about. In other words, either convert to Islam or die. And I recognize that I'm in a nation with a higher than normal Muslim population, mainly radicalized in the South. But you only live once, and you've got to say what you want to say. In my case, those words were not mine, but those of Dr. Vernon Chong, Major General, USAF, retired. But I agree with them, and so be it. You only live once. There is other news that I could go through here, but I think I'll hold the majority of it for tomorrow night. I would like to, I'd like to take some calls. I'd like to get some reaction to what I just read and what is the top story tonight. It's absolutely incredible. Anyway, in the next hour, we're going to be interviewing William Henry, and tomorrow night, Major Ed Dames, who's had a couple of recent hits. And so it should be, all in all, a very, very interesting weekend. There are a number of storms out there, some hurricanes, some typhoons. There is a typhoon that virtually, we think, might have destroyed Wake Island. That would be any building not made of concrete on Wake Island, with winds approaching 200 miles an hour, if you can imagine that. On the first-time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Is this me?
Yeah, it's you.
Oh, I wanted to know if what your thoughts were on the goth scene.
I'm sorry, on the what?
The goth subculture.
The what subculture?
Goth, G-O-T-H.
Well, the goth subculture. I don't have any thoughts because I don't know what that is. What is it?
It's a whole bunch of different things. There's a whole bunch of different ideas about what it is. Some people think it's about music. Some think it's about art.
That's probably why I couldn't answer your question. I not understanding what it is, I'm not going to be able to answer your question.
Oh, okay.
I appreciate your hurling it toward me, but and I'll try and educate myself about it, but I really don't know. And apparently you're not fully informed on it yourself. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bill.
Yes.
Hello, this is a first-time caller, long-time listener.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I am a former employee of Area 51, and about, you know, I'm a little bit nervous, but around April of last year, I had an alien experience, And I've been a little bit too nervous to talk about it, but now I'm able to speak about it if you'd like.
All right, calm down. I'll tell you what, a former employee of Area 51, eh?
Well, I was an IT guy. I was fixing their Unix server, and I had
problems. Oh, all right, that's good enough. So you were working on their computer setup, right?
Mm-hmm, their network and their workstations.
Uh-huh. Okay. What I'm going to do is hold you over during the break, and okay. Believe me, anybody who worked for Area 51, I want to have a little chat with, so stay right there, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Very good. From Southeast Asia, Philippines, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, here I am, speaking Manila, Philippines. The rainy season, such as it is, and we had rain every single day, they call it the rainy season for a good reason, has ended. The sun is out, and there's sort of a little, very little snap in the air, you know, as we might describe it, fall across a great deal of the U.S. It's not exactly fall here, mind you. The sun is out, it's hot again, and fairly humid, but not quite as humid. So there's a very minor snap in the air, and it's clear out there and very nice. In a moment, we'll continue with a caller who claims he worked at Area 51. Rarely does one get the luxury of somebody who claims they worked at Area 51. In the case of this man, he did some important computer work for them. And the first question I have for you, sir, before we get into any detail of what you may have seen, is I would like to know, even to go to Area 51 to do contractual work, the kind of work you did, I would assume that you would have to sign some sort of document saying you'd keep your mouth shut about anything you saw. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And so now here you are on a worldwide talk show about to tell us all about it. Is that correct?
Indeed.
Doesn't that concern you somewhat?
Well, I am currently not in the right state of mind, sir. What the experiences I had at that job that one night that made me say, okay, I'm done with this. I have not been able to sleep, to talk about it, to get any help from my family, psychiatrist, for over a year now. And I was last weekend, I was coming from Fresno for job interviews, and I tuned into your radio station, and I thought, and I felt the courage to say, you know what, I think I'll call in next weekend and talk to him.
All right. You're talking about an area very close to my home in Nevada, just really over the mountain from where I lived and still maintain my home in Nevada. So if you would, please tell us everything that's relevant about why you're here on the radio.
I was not really the network administrator, but one of the network techs. We mostly worked with the security, changing the administrative rights and passwords every few hours. I wasn't able to look at all of them, but I have been able to open up secret documents to change administrative rights on the computer.
Okay, all right, good enough. Do you want to talk about what you saw in them?
Well, it was documents about the encounters of what experiences or experiments they've done with aliens at that place. And they said that the blues and the grays had something to do with September 11th.
They did?
Mm-hmm.
Did they actually describe their involvement? Certainly we pretty well know what happened and who did it.
Well, that's the thing, that the document said that they believed that there was, with the blue and the gray civil war going on, that there had some involvement, but I wasn't able to have the time to read the whole document. But
so they believe there's civil war going on between the blues and the grays?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Did it document when contact between those at Area 51 and those from elsewhere began? Did it document anything about Roswell? Did you get to read anything about that?
A lot of it was encrypted. I did not get full rights, but There was the night that I quit my job, I was abducted. And if you like, I can tell you the story.
All right, let's hear about that night. That night apparently is what's haunting you. What happened that night that caused you to quit?
Well, I was on the graveyard shift. We were backing up files. We have a tape backup device that says every night we back up information on the secret server. And when I went outside to talk to the security guards, I was on my break. We were just having a cigarette or something. We were eating Krispy Kreme donuts. And then what appeared to be a banana-shaped spaceship or something split through the sky, mm-hmm. coming down. And I won't repeat the words I said on the radio station. I'm a gentleman, but
Thank you.
Said some words. I was very scared. Now, there were these smooth ball blue creatures. I'm sorry, I'm really nervous.
No, I understand.
I'm just trying to relax. These small beings, they said, "You are the chosen one, the one who will deliver the message, a message of hope for those who choose to hear it, and a warning for those who do not." Now, what I've been pondering for this year is, what does that mean? And that is one of the reasons why I called you.
So they never gave you the message?
They gave me the message saying, "I'm the chosen one." I don't understand why I'm the chosen one.
You're the chosen one, and there is a message for those who want to hear it, even those, I guess, who don't. But what the key is, what's the message? Or is that where you decided, "I don't want to be a messenger, I'm out of here, I quit"?
Well, if I am the chosen one, I kind of have to be. Kind of, you know, Jesus didn't say, "You know what, I don't want to be the Son of God." I mean, he kind of had to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for this year, I've been in hiding. I haven't really been myself, and that's why I called you. I was wondering your thoughts on your opinions on what this message could be. Could it be about the end of the world, the apocalypse? Could it be that the world will now know that there are beings outside of this galaxy that want to contact with us? I'm just wondering what your thoughts and opinions are.
My immediate thought is, and I'm sorry you didn't stick around to get the message.
Yeah.
So that's when you quit then.
Yes. I don't know what happened. That just happened. I was so scared. They took me to the hospital. And I was, you know, just in the hospital for a few days. And then when I got out, I contacted my supervisor and I said, "What happened to me that night, I do not want to talk about it. I'm done with this. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. And I am going to move far away as possible. Now I'm in the California area, the Kern County area."
So you're all the way on the other side of the country. All right, well, listen, is there anything else critical that we should know that you found out there?
Well, I was taken up to the ship, and they did a few experiments on me, mostly sexually.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's been repeated again and again, and then you were returned. So do you think any of that, the fact that you were abducted, is affecting what you're telling us right now?
Can you repeat the question, sir?
Yeah. Do you think the fact that you were abducted and those experiments they did to you, is that affecting what you're telling us right now? In other words,
are they mind-controlling me or telling me what I need to say?
Yeah. Do you think you're under some kind of control?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, sir. I haven't been myself lately for the past year.
All right. Well, listen, if anything else occurs to you, you get back to us, all right?
I will. And thank you for talking to me, sir.
You're very welcome. Take care. Somebody claims that he was working on computers at Area 51, saw information to the effect that the Grays and the Blues are in some sort of civil war. But most of all, was about to receive a message, the message, apparently, that we should all know. And did drop the name Jesus. Now, if Moses had, instead of bringing the Ten Commandments down from the mountain, had decided he didn't want to receive the message, nor did he wish to carry it down the mountain and bring it to us, we would not have it today. So I'm kind of sorry that you didn't hang in there and get the message. But I can understand. You sounded very nervous, and I guess I can understand why you would not wish to proceed, although I wish you had. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, this is Charlie from Pennsylvania. Have
yes,
you read David Rockefeller's memoirs?
I have not.
Well, on page 405, he is quoted saying, "Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and conspiring with others around the world."
That's absolutely correct, sir. I mean, a lot of people believe that of the Rockefellers and
others. World, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, our president, I mean, is speaking just like Hitler. Can I read a quote, Seth?
Yeah, I suppose so. Go ahead.
See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to catapult the propaganta. Greece, New York, May 24th, 2005.
All right, well, thank you very much. I imagine that one day, not in our lifetimes, but one day in the future somewhere, it probably will be one world. After all, we've gone from, what was it in the beginning? The Stone Age, and then tribes. We were tribal for a period of time, and tribes began trading with each other. And then small villages sprang up, and the villages began trading with each other. And then eventually, of course, cities and nations sprang up, and those cities began trading, as did the nations, as do the nations now trade. And now, of course, in our lifetimes, we've witnessed blocks beginning to form. The European bloc, the Asian bloc, the American bloc, or the Americas bloc, if you will. And those blocs are beginning to trade with each other. So if you look at what's happened since the dawn of mankind, I think it's fairly safe to assume that indeed, one day, we're going to be one world. We're going to be a single world of some sort. Let's go to the international line and say, hello there, you are on the air.
Hi, Art. Good afternoon. This is Nena. I'm calling from Richmond, British Columbia, and we have spoken a few times, remember? I was the one who wanted to talk to Ramona.
Yes, I recall.
Yes. The reason why I called is I'll be coming over for a holiday in the Philippines.
Oh, really?
Yes, next week. I wonder if is there a chance that I can invite you and your wife, beautiful wife, for a get-together. You know, I really, really want to see you.
All right. Here's the way to do it. Email me. I'm artbell@mindspring.com. Artbell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, at mindspring.com. Email me. Let me know what your schedule is, and I'll do the very best I can. That's all I can promise. I'll email back, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay. I'll be there between September 11 and 24. My house is just close to where you live, so maybe I would be lucky to see your wife.
Well, I think it's entirely possible. So you email me, and we'll see what we can do. All right?
Sure, of course. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Take care. As a matter of fact, my wife and I are looking forward to meeting perhaps some other Americans here in the Manila area who are married to Filipinas. And if that would be the case with you and you're in this particular area or you travel through, feel free to contact me. Now, obviously, we're not going to be able to meet with everybody. It just simply can't be done. But should the opportunity arise, we would be more than happy to meet some people in this area, particularly people who are in the same sort of situation that we're in. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
All right, Art. Your
yes.
show is number one on the internet, kid.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
great. You actually are ranked by TalkStreamLive.com. Congratulations, you're number one. I guess you know
no
that.
No kidding.
Name, right?
You know, that's amazing. I keep getting word of these things that have been happening to me lately, honors bestowed on me, top 25 talk show hosts of all time, that kind of thing, which is pretty cool. And I get it from all of the listeners out there. And so here you just gave me another one. So we're ranked number one, eh?
That's right. TalkStream Live. Also,
where are you located, by the way?
I'm in East Haven, Connecticut.
Connecticut. I know Connecticut very well indeed.
And you're also, believe it or not, you're a big hit on shortwave radio. You have guys who host shows. I mean, you know shortwave radio because you're a big radio guy. Most people might not even know what we're talking about. You're a big hit. You got a lot of fans out there.
Well,
Art, the 9/11 attack was a military operation planned for, trained, and executed within the borders of the United States. And when you get hit within your perimeter, you secure the perimeter. Bush didn't secure our borders. Instead, Bush calls the Minutemen vigilantes, and Bush wants amnesty for illegal invaders inside America. Folks, every enemy of America has their agents in America. They're coming in every single day. They're creating political movements. They're creating fundraisers, i.e. Hezbollah was convicted a couple of years ago of running money laundering business in North Carolina, the home of our Marines. Hezbollah bombed our Marine barracks back in 83.
Well, I just went through all that. John, how would you secure our borders? I mean, realistically, we've got a couple of borders that are full of water, right? Those are tough. And then, of course, we've got a couple of borders that are even harder, that with Mexico and that with Canada. We're a big nation with nothing but borders. How do we physically, how do we actually control our borders? How do we do it?
Okay, and also the airports. First of all, what I would have done, well, I was proposing this before 9/11, but obviously everybody should have been on board after 9/11. I would immediately have contacted every foreign country in the world and tell them, look, you got people inside America with visa violations, their visas have expired. Get your people out of America or you're going to lose visa privileges and we're going to come down on you, whether it's trade, financial aid, whatever it is. We have plenty of aspects to go after them on that. Get them out of here. There would be no more student visas from Muslim countries and no more flights coming in from Muslim countries. Instead, Bush has actually increased to over 30,000, believe it or not, Saudi and Egyptian student visas coming into America. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely sick. I would have immediately sent down the military. You only needed about 10,000 guys on the Mexican border with all our electronics. You couldn't get an ant, wouldn't have been able to move through that border. Then I would have also secured the Canadian border in a similar way. I would have call for a civilian border patrol, i.e. like the great civilian air patrol of World War II, and we did get it with the Minutemen, but it would have been even bigger. I also proposed a new branch to the military. You say, well, that would be big. No, it wouldn't. I would get all these 17, 18, 19-year-old kids who grew up on computers, would have created a cyber computerized military, another branch where these kids would have shut down anything around the world with their great technology and their great know-how. We have a lot of people.
John, I'm not sure, John, that 10,000 military could secure, for example, 2,200 miles of border with Mexico.
I'm talking about actually, that's the initial would have happened. I would be building a wall right there. I'm talking about 10,000 with electronics. They would be backed up by the Border Patrol, National Guard, and even more troops. But I would immediately have had 10,000 down there with electronics to stop any movement down there. Then the wall goes up, a double wall goes up there. Look, Art, I could also propose, I could solve a lot of America's problems. New Orleans is what? It's below sea level. I would have dug a trench right through the Mexican border, took that land, that soil to New Orleans, brought New Orleans above sea level. In that trench, I would have took all the excess alligators in Florida, put it in the trench, put water in there. That would have stopped off the border being overrun.
Alligators.
New
alligators.
Orleans would be above sea level. I'd be solving all the problems.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great minds out here, Art, and we're not going to be suppressed.
Okay. All right, John. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. I know that Pat Buchanan was recently a guest on the show. I'm not a big fan of all he articulates. America does need immigrants. Make no mistake about it. We are a country that wouldn't be what we are without immigrants. Now, exactly how we separate the wheat from the chaff is entirely a different question, and we need a means and a way to do that. From Manila in the Philippines, Southeast Asia, I'm Art Bell.